From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, Brother Guy joins us, the Vatican and the Observatory. I'm looking forward to that. Here's what's happening. Well, federal officials are insisting that X-ray scanners used at the Fort Lauderdale Hollywood International Airport are safe for travelers, but Broward County commissioners aren't too convinced. On a split vote, a majority of the commissioners asked the Federal Transportation Security Administration to do more to assure travelers that the X-ray scanners are safe or ban them from use if they're not. You know, Europe has banned them already. With those actions, Broward County and its airport became the first in the United States to take a stand in this international debate. Only 40 airports so far in the United States have the controversial backscatter machines. In a moment, Jonathan Emord joins us. We'll talk about this and some other related issues. The National Transportation Safety Board has recommended a nationwide ban on driver use of personal electronic devices following its investigation into a deadly accident last year in Missouri. The NTSB's recommendations urge all 50 states and the district to ban the non-emergency use of portable electronic devices. Meanwhile, though, increased risk of having a car crash attributed to cell phone use may have been overestimated in some past studies, according to a new analysis. New research taken says that some of it was skewed and it might be wrong. The report by Richard Young of Wayne State University's School of Medicine in Detroit finds that two influential studies on the subject might have overestimated the risk. Physicists are closer than ever now to hunting down the elusive Higgs boson particle, the missing piece of the governing theory of the universe's tiniest building blocks. Scientists at the world's largest particle accelerator, the Large Hadron Collider at CERN in Switzerland, announced that they have narrowed down the list of possible hiding spots for Higgs, and some even see some indications that they are hot on the trail. Vivek Sharma is a professor in physics at the Department of the University of California in San Diego. His research is in experimental particle physics, and he's a lead researcher on the CERN project. And we go live to Europe now for Dr. Vivek. This is an exciting news, Doctor. What's the latest?
Well, we have been searching for this particle for several years now, and now we are closing in on where this particle could be hiding.
This
narrowed it down to a very small mass range.
This particle would tell us what if you find it?
You know, discovery of this Higgs boson is a very important clue for our understanding of the subatomic world. Without such a particle, it would be impossible to explain why we exist, why the Earth exists, the solar system, the galaxies, and indeed the entire universe exists. And this conjecture from Peter Higgs, a physicist from Scotland, is true, then Higgs particle gives mass to everything in the universe. But the irony is that the mass of such a particle, such a postulated particle, is unknown. And so we have been searching for it since 1989. And now we are honing in and we have trapped it into a very small mass range where it could exist. It may not exist, but if it exists, it has been trapped into a mass range just around the mass, just above mass of a silver atom.
Dr. Sharma, if we find it, could there be any surprises attached to it?
Depending on what the mass of this particle is, if we don't find it, there will be chaos in science. That is for sure. So the question is, does it exist or does it not exist? And we have mostly ruled it out over the entire, almost the entire mass range where it could exist. But now a tiny sliver of mass range is left, and the data that we will take next year will prove whether there is such a thing as Higgs boson or not.
This will be exciting.
Yeah, if there isn't, this would just bring entire science and our understanding of the subatomic world to a complete chaos.
Okay, we'll be in touch with you, Doctor. Thank you so much. Dr. Sharma, of course, is out there at CERN right now, and he's one of the lead investigators as they look for the Higgs boson. A 7.3 magnitude earthquake has just hit New Guinea. No reports of a tsunami. The felt was felt by people at least 1,500 kilometers away. It occurred on land. Again, No reports of damage at this time. Two top U.S. hurricane forecasters are quitting the practice because they say it just doesn't work. William Gray and Phil Klotschback say they look back now over their work for the last 20 years. It had no value at all. The two scientists from Colorado State University will still discuss different probabilities as hurricane seasons approach, which they say is a much more cautious approach. But the shift signals how far humans are, even with supercomputers, from truly knowing what our weather will do next. But Mitch Batras, Earth Changes Media, he's with us here. You know, you and I have talked about this, Mitch, for the last year or so, how they are wrong on so many of these predictions. And now the predictors are saying it doesn't work.
Well, it's not exactly as it sounds. I think it's been taken a bit out of context. They're not quitting, and they're still going to be with the National Weather Service and the Hurricane Center. Now, Dr. Gray has been very vocal about global warming, as in against global warming. My best guess is that has something to do with it. But he clearly says that he's not quitting. He does want to discontinue predicting past December from December to, say, June, that the accuracy has not been up to par. However, he says that the material that he does get in his observations are not that far off. Now, listen to this, George. This is what counters everything.
All right.
The 2011 hurricane season was the third highest total since records began in 1851. 19 tropical storms and 3 major hurricanes have occurred during this last season. So they haven't been as accurate, especially Dr. Gray, he hasn't been as accurate as he would like. But this still was a pretty darn active season. And there's a tropical storm still carrying on today. We tend to focus, of course, on the United States. But Europe's getting pounded right now. And then, of course, Asia is really the catching a storm.
Well, but it does tell you, Mitch, as we pointed out, that even the predictors are sometimes puzzled by what's going on with Mother Nature, which changes all the time. Thanks. Mitch Batras is a website, earthchangesmedia.com, part of our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. A woman dies and leaves $13 million. To who? Her stray cat. That's right, she did. She also left property in Rome, Milan, and Calabria. $13 million. She loves the cat, and the cat was the only thing she had, and it's going to live quite well for a long, long time. One of our stories of our highlight reel at coasttocoastam.com. As you will see, a lot of protesters in Moscow. That's part of the story, but the other part, of course, was there was a UFO spotted overhead above the crowd. I don't know what it was. Was it a Russian drone? Who knows? But they say it was a UFO. Doesn't mean it's extraterrestrial, but nobody knows what it was. Go take a look at it. It's at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Jonathan Emord practices constitutional and administrative law in Washington, D.C. before federal agencies. He's the only attorney in history that has defeated the Food and Drug Administration at least 7 times now in federal court. 6 times on First Amendment grounds. We're going to talk with him this hour about a number of issues that affect you directly, and we'll take your calls later on. Welcoming back to Coast, Mr. Jonathan Emord. Hi, John. How are you?
Hey, great to be with you, George.
Likewise, too. Let's look at this TSA story. Broward County, smart enough to say, look, we don't think these body scanners are safe. There could be some radiation concerns. Europe's already doing this. What's going on there?
Well, they're absolutely right, and the House of Representatives believes they are right. They just completed a report, a staff investigation of the first 10 years of TSA, and they found some really unfortunate truths about TSA. TSA is enormous, 65,000 employees. They spend $57 billion to operate the thing. They have 3,986 administrators who are paid $103,852 per year on average. And yet, despite all that manpower, GAO found that 17 known terrorists traveled on 24 different occasions through security checkpoints at 8 different TSA-operated screening locations, and not a single one was stopped by the TSA. They're inept. They're fat. They're dumb. They're slow. It's a disaster, George.
Well, not only that, I've been traveling a lot, Jonathan, over the last week or so, and I have gone through these scanners now probably 3 to 4 times. That's a lot, isn't it?
It is a lot, and I'm with you. I travel quite a bit, and it's most unfortunate. I mean, getting dosed with radiation for absolutely no reason. I mean, the evidence here is that these machines are not effective in identifying the most important source of terrorism, that is, the use of plastic explosives or hidden explosives. According to the GAO, again, they found that it was entirely unclear whether these devices have detected explosives, and they say that they doubt seriously it could have detected even the underwear bomber's explosives, and that they think that the devices are questionable. Despite that, we're spending $122 million on these things, and we're going to spend a lot more, close to $500 million by 2013. And TSA really is actually creating terrorist risks by having these enormous lines. They're slow processing. These lines are themselves opportune moments for acts of terrorism. You know, they have a security checkpoint, which at best, it hasn't done it, but at best, it would stop a terrorist who was standing in line for 35 minutes. It's just not going to happen. If a terrorist wants to kill 200 people, they can blow them up in the line. They can blow up aircraft on the runway. They can shoot aircraft down as they're taking off or as they're landing. I mean, it's absurd. We're spending an enormous amount of money on something that's not working. And not only that, they found that the screening program that is a part of the authorization bill, the screening partnership program, which has private security firms, they found that the private security firms are more effective in almost every measure. And because of that, the administrator of TSA went around the country along with his staff lobbying local authorities to prevent the private program from being operational, even though it is mandated by law. In fact, the TSA administrator just announced that he's cutting off the program entirely, unilaterally, against the law.
I just watched a Showtime movie this weekend, Jonathan. And listen to this. You know the carry-on luggage that we all have. And now it comes with that little thing that pulls up, the little handle, and you can pull it, right?
Right.
Well, in this movie, this guy had his handle, but it was a weapon. And so when he wanted to, all he had to do was pull the handle right out of the suitcase, and he had like 2 daggers on each end. What are the odds of those getting through security? Probably pretty good.
It's pretty good. I mean, the problem here is, I mean, look at this. TSA wasted $39 million to buy these things called explosive trace detection portals. $39 million they spent on that. Now, these machines were never proven and have not been able to consistently detect explosives. And so what do they do with them? They just paid the Department of Defense $600 per unit to dispose of the very machines they spent $39 million to procure. They have these devices that are supposed to be used in detecting terror, these AITs they're called, and they deploy them so stupidly that GAO inspectors could circumvent them and get into a line without going through those devices. The whole thing, sadly, is a game of smoke and mirrors, and that's exactly what Congress found. Congress found that this whole process was not really, in the end, legitimate. They found that TSA spends far more energy, money, and effort to manage the 65,000 people, which is more people than is employed by the Department of Labor, Energy, Education, Housing and Urban Development, and State combined, than it does on its fundamental mission. And it is not working. I mean, if it had a record where they could say they stopped one terrorist in 10 years, but that's not happened. Not a single one.
Not at all. What's going on in the world of consumer news for all of us these days?
Well, sadly, if you have a mobile medical app on your portable device, you're in for a sad reality that's going to set in very shortly. The FDA has decided to regulate mobile medical apps. And the consequence of this, George, is that we're going to see a shutdown in this marketplace as soon as FDA begins enforcement. And we have a little prelude to what's happening here. There's enormous corruption involved with this, but the FDA, there's a thing called, a company called MIM, and they created this device that combined images, CT scans, PET scans, and MRIs, and enhanced this image enormously that previously was less than sufficient, so that diagnosis was more exacting. And this could appear on a portable, you know, on an iPad or an iPhone. And MIM applied to the FDA for approval. Well, it took FDA years to approve it, and then when the approval finally came, it applied only to the then existing technology, so no updates can happen on these things legally. So you end up with a static technology. Well, there are thousands of these devices now out there in the market without going through the process, and they're enormously beneficial, making it possible for people to be diagnosed and treated in remote locations. All of it is going to come to a crashing halt. An enormous marketplace is going to be shut down because FDA is going to presume itself better able to determine the effectiveness of this stuff than the doctors who use it.
Let me ask you this too, John. With all this that's going on, you've been looking at a court order on the cigarette companies. What's that?
Well, this is a good piece of news, positive. Judge Richard Leon issued a preliminary injunction November 7th against the FDA, barring the FDA from forcing cigarette companies to place these graphic color images, such as diseased lungs and a cadaver bearing chest staples, and all these things that FDA wanted to force cigarette companies to have on their packages. Now, I'm not a fan of cigarettes, and I'm not saying it's good to smoke, but this is ridiculous. FDA spent millions of taxpayer dollars trying to show that use of these graphic images on cigarettes covering 50% of the package, that were really grotesque images, would reduce the smoking rates. And they found that less than 1%, in fact, a fraction of 1%, were dissuaded. Nonetheless, they spent millions more forcing the cigarette companies to abide by this. And the upshot of it was that, you know, it's compelled speech of a product that's lawful, presenting actually deceptive images. They were doctored and so forth. And their whole purpose, having found no evidence of reduction in smoking, they said, well, our real purpose is to create a high level of what they called salience, which means shock value. Well, Judge Leon saw right through this, and he held it unconstitutional under the First Amendment, said it was compelled speech, and it's unlawful under the First Amendment. But what was really extraordinary in this case, in addition, was that the FDA had the audacity to argue, as it has argued in cases that I've brought too, that the court didn't have the power to compel FDA to stop using this regulation. They had the audacity to argue to the judge that he lacked the authority to impose an injunction against the FDA. And he laughed this off. He said, and I quote him here, there's no genuine question about this court's authority to issue injunctive relief in this case. But that's how arrogant this agency is.
And they're doing it all the time, Jonathan.
All the time. All the time.
They just don't stop. Well, stay with us. We've got some more things we want to talk with you about. Plus, we will take some phone calls in a moment. Jonathan Emord, his website, emord.com. Spend some time, take a look at some of the things he has done, including his book, Global Censorship of Health Information and the Rise of Tyranny, as well. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. I'm George Norrie, and we will be back in a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we'll find out why the Vatican has an observatory. What are they looking for? Hey, by the way, are you a Coast Insider? You can be for less than 25 cents a day. As a matter of fact, tonight we had our regular monthly chat, 600 people in the room asking questions and just having some fun. And that's part of being a Coast Insider as well, along with downloads, podcasting, picking up 1,000 past shows and storing them away. Simply go to our website, coasttocoastam.com. We have a goal of 2,000 new members this month in December. You could click the little banner up there that says Coast Insider and fill out the information. And we will be back with your phone calls and Jonathan Emord on Coast to Coast AM. Jonathan, have you found that when things started getting tight economically, that governmental control over different things turned more toward the corporations and even farther away from people?
Yes, there's a long movement, decades-long movement, of the regulatory establishment to be a handmaiden for the highest, the largest companies in an industry. And so the FCC, for example, is largely dominated by the largest broadcasting entities in the country and cable entities in the country. The FDA is dominated by the largest drug companies, and the list goes on and on as far as regulated companies. And, you know, the problem is that the it's in the self-interest of those who are in the political positions to make decisions, to favor those who are the largest industry people, because when they get out of office, that's where they're going to be employed.
That's their job. That's their future, isn't it?
That's right. And it's true of Congress as well. So we have this disgustingly sickening environment, a cesspool of corruption that permeates throughout our government and is largely responsible for the difficulties that we have. Yet, as the economy gets worse, the industry goes even more to the government for protection, anti-competitive regulation. And under the guise of protecting the public, regulations are then promulgated to an even more extreme degree. They're just flying out of the agencies right now. And they are really designed to block competition, to bolster the market position of the leading industry. The industry can pay for lawyers, can pay for submissions to the government, and can work with the government at a high level that costs hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. A new startup operation simply can't do that.
Or an individual. Individuals, unless they have a Jonathan Emord on their side, they can't get help.
It's a trap for the unwary. The typical American believes that he has basic rights to life and to liberty and to property that are not capable of being violated arbitrarily by the government. And yet you start into a business and you suddenly realize, oh my goodness, they're saying that I failed to file X or Y or Z. They're saying that I cannot advertise or promote my product in a particular way. They're saying that I made a mistake by opening an operation in this location. It goes on and on, and the real purpose of it is to guard those heavily vested interests that are the ones that are financing the campaigns, that are lobbying daily the regulatory agencies, that are calling the shots. And the American people have nothing to do with this. It's all these major players who are influencing the outcomes.
Jonathan, let's wrap up this hour with phone calls with you. We'll go to Carl in Plano, Texas, east of the Rockies. Carl, good evening. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you. How you doing there, Jonathan?
Great. Good to hear from you.
You know, you were talking about the TSA a little bit earlier when I first tuned in, and I remember one thing that happened a while back when I flew. They told me I had too many little tiny camcorder batteries in my briefcase, so that had to be put in the luggage and sent that way as opposed to me carrying it on board. And yet, well, the other thing that really surprises me is I recently went out and bought a real nice piece of cutlery. It's one of those 10-inch long white ceramic knives with a rubber handle, and I just don't have any belief that they can even find those things when you're carrying one, and that's a pretty nasty blade.
Well, I think you're right. I should say, from the congressional report from these investigators who spent almost a year studying all the aspects of TSA, this is one of their conclusions, and I'm quoting them. TSA's screening policies are based on theatrics. They are typical bureaucratic responses to failed security policies meant to assuage the concerns of the traveling public. Now, unquote. In other words, this is a smoke and mirrors game.
It's a show, isn't
it? It's a show. And it really isn't effective. And you can probably get your knife through. You could probably get a, you know, they're focusing on a particular kind of person, they say. But, you know, a terrorist is a criminal, a simple criminal. It's not, it's a horrible thing, but he's a murderer. And we have murderers that are gang members. We have murderers who are in the mob. We have murderers who are, you know, these things are going to happen. And who is our best defense? Who has been most successful in ferreting out a terrorist and stopping him? It's been the traveling public.
That's right. And they've been stepping up to the plate, too.
Yeah, Americans.
You know, they see a guy, you know, knocking on the door of the pilot's cockpit, and they jump him. They hold him down. I mean, we heard that story a few weeks ago. Could have been a tragedy. It was hilarious. Where the pilot had to go to the bathroom, Jonathan, locked himself in. The handle broke, and the only guy who could hear him was a foreigner who went to the door of the bathroom, which is near the cockpit. The pilot whispered him the password to talk to the co-pilot so he would let him in so he could tell him he's not going to join us here for the landing. And so here's this guy with his accent telling the, trying to yell through the door, I've got the password. I've got the password. I mean, of course he's not going to let him in. And so he's radioing the tower. You know, there's a guy with a foreign accent out there. I don't know where the pilot is. He never came back. And he's got, this guy's got the password. What do I do? The tower said, you better land right now. Well, they did. And it was a comedy of errors. Indeed, the pilot, the handle broke off. He couldn't get out. And this nice guy was trying to tell the co-pilot what happened. But, I mean, that's how edgy everybody is.
Yeah, and I think it's appropriate to be mindful, aware. It's appropriate for us to emphasize to the public to look out for people who look suspicious, who are taking an action that seems suspicious. We're all on edge. And we're doing a much better job than the TSA in interdicting and stopping terrorism. The TSA is costing us billions and is doing nothing for us than giving us a really rather pathetic Hollywood production. And if that money were spent on Hollywood, well, we'd be entertained for several centuries. But it's not funny, and it's not entertaining that we're spending all this money. And it's not a nice thing when a woman who's 85 years old with a walker is detained for over a half an hour in process because these brilliant folks think that she's a potential threat to the world.
When she's got a hip replacement.
Right. This is pathetic. This is not the way to do it. You don't make every American citizen a suspect. You look for those people who have the characteristics. More importantly, you go after terrorism overseas. You go after the source of it. You eliminate it. We're becoming increasingly effective with drone technology in doing that. There's no need to make the entire nation subject to suspicion and make every passenger be groped and be abused and be run through radiation. It's not working. It is creating opportunities for crime and terrorism by amassing lines of people. Sometimes, you know, at LAX, my goodness.
It's crazy.
Yeah. And if you are a terrorist, I mean, you may be a dumb person, perhaps. But if you were thinking, I'm going to board a plane, to blow up the plane, to kill 150 to 200 passengers, why do I need to board the plane? I can just run into this line and kill an equal number of people. It just doesn't make any sense. And so we know what's effective. Private agencies, security agencies that are discreet, that don't have the massive checkpoints, that observe the passengers and interact with them, and passengers themselves who are alert, and have the ability to communicate that to others or take personal action in most instances.
The time will come, Jonathan. The time will come where they will have checkpoints before you even get into the terminal. Watch.
Yes.
Watch that happen. Let's go to Willow in Williams, Oregon, west of the Rockies. Hi, Willow.
Hi, good evening, George. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure.
Hello, Jonathan.
Hi.
I'd like to find out some information, possibly, if you know. A few weeks ago, I read an article on the counter in our local health food store, and it stated that the FDA was getting ready to take control of the supplements and regulate, you know, putting on, it was like putting on so much requirements that each little thing, if it was increased by, you know, a millimeter or whatever, then they had to go through the whole thing again to be inspected and so on and so forth. Were you aware of that?
Yes, it's called the NDI, New Dietary Ingredient Guidance. Mm-hmm. And if it were implemented, approximately half of the existing supplements on the market would have to be taken off the market.
Right.
And we would be perpetually stuck in a technological environment that preexisted the date of October 15th, 1994 in the manufacture of supplements. But it would have a devastating economic impact. And the positive news here is that while trade associations tend to be in bed with the agency, on this one, it's so egregious that all the trade associations in the supplement industry and hundreds of supplement companies and consumers have all universally called for the withdrawal of this proposal. Now, the FDA may not take heed, but I think there's amassing a major political coalition that can block FDA from taking this draconian step. It's a clear effort to reduce your choice in the market by cutting out as much as 50% of available products that are safely consumed out there.
Do you have any problems, Jonathan, with some kind of regulation to make sure we don't get some of this junk, for example, that has come in from China?
I don't. I think that it's appropriate to test products coming in from overseas to determine whether they're contaminated. Going after somebody who's trying to hurt someone, I'm all for that. It's just assuming that the innocent are guilty that I'm against, and that's what the government's all about. Prior restraints, limiting your freedom of choice. It's like the TSA thing. It's limiting everybody's freedom of choice with a massive prior restraint on your right to get on an airplane based on the supposition that you're a terrorist. The supposition starts, there's something wrong with you that we need to check to massively invade your anatomy with these screening devices to make sure that we've done everything possible to rule you out as a suspect. We start with the supposition that you are guilty. You prove by undergoing all of these tests and jumping through these hoops that you're not.
All right, let's go to West Los Angeles. It's Wayne's turn on Coast to Coast. Hi, Wayne. Good morning.
Good evening, good morning, wherever you guys are. I've been listening to your program this evening. I'm a former federal agent, and I left government service because I had a bad taste in my mouth. And my question, i.e. point, is, you know, to the public we always say, you know, the government is corrupt, and it's the government this, the government that, whatever. I think it's time now, before it's too late, to start putting names and faces to that catch-all phrase of corrupt government. Maybe if we start exposing who's behind these bills, who are the people behind, and we all know who made those machines, who used to be former government employee,
yes,
for lack of a better way of putting it, is making millions off of these machines. Who's in bed with whom, and put names and faces to that?
Wouldn't
you agree?
Yep, I agree wholeheartedly. Jonathan, I'm sure you do too.
Oh, I absolutely do. It is the primary function of investigative journalism. It's a critical measure to have an active media that does this very thing, to put a check on government abuses. It's always been this way in this country, that role is the fifth estate, the role of the media. We have to check these things. We need a very active investigative journalist community. I'm I salute George because he's one of the few journalists out there who's courageous enough to expose all this corruption and secrecy in government. It's essential. We have to be sovereign. In order to be sovereign, to have a true republic operating here in which we are sovereign, it's no mistake the Constitution begins its preamble, we the people. It is our duty then to assert our sovereignty and not to sit back idly and accept all of this nonsense like TSA. There's enormous corruption operating in TSA, and exposing it should be a primary function for the journalistic community, and then voters should act on it. We should take action against those who support this monstrosity.
Did you see where Ron Paul is only 1 point behind Newt Gingrich in an Iowa poll now? That's incredible for him. It really is.
He's a person of such tremendous integrity and honesty, and it's so hard to get the public to appreciate fully the great person that he is. I know him, and I've written legislation for him, and I admire him so much, but I wish, you know, through all of the hype, you could see through to see the person that he is, because he is the person of integrity that I think people want. He stands for principle, even when it means a loss of political support.
That's right. That's right. He's an honest guy. He's been on our program twice, Jonathan, when others don't want to come on and face the music. I mean, he does his thing, and I have found him just in my two brief encounters to be very honest and caring about people. I mean, he wants to do the right thing, and it's been a long, long time since we've had that.
And he really loves this country. He understands fundamentally what the Constitution is meant to be, and he appreciates how far we've come from a constitutional republic and how close to the brink of utter destruction our nation is because of these enormous financial problems and overregulation. And I think he would, if he were given a chance to be heard fully, a lot of people, I think, would find him very appealing.
I think if he were told that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction, if he were president, he would say, I want to see them firsthand.
That's right.
He's that kind of guy. Let's go to Manhattan. Rick, take it away. You're up with us. Go ahead, Rick.
Good morning.
Morning.
The passengers aboard the international and domestic flights can have stuff hidden inside their body cavities, and the cargo underneath the in the hold is partially inspected. It's possibly randomly inspected. It's not 100% inspected. The carriers, except for UPS, use gamma radiation to detect, contraband. But the thing is, if you separate the cargo and ship the cargo on a separate flight from the passengers, then the only people who are vulnerable are the passengers themselves.
That's true. We're out of time. I clipped you, Rick. Do try to call back during one of our other calls. I want to get to the bottom of that, too. Jonathan, thank you so much for being on the show.
Great to be with you, George.
Jonathan Emord. Up next, we talk about the Vatican Observatory at Coast to Coast AM.